This is Debate Week on Vermont Edition, and today we bring you the leading Democratic candidates for lieutenant governor in a face-to-face debate. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. I'm joined in VPR's Colchester studio by three Democrats who are seeking the party nomination to be second in command. Keisha Rahm is a state representative from Burlington. Speaker of the House Shap Smith is from Morrisville, and Senator David Zuckerman is from Hinesburg. Welcome to all three of you.
Great to be here.
And listeners, welcome to you. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPR Debate Week to comment on what you're hearing from the candidates today. Here's the format for the debate. In the first half, I'll ask the questions with help from Vermonters who've been submitting their questions to us over the last several days. In the second half, the candidates will question one another directly, and if time allows, we'll squeeze in a lightning round before we wrap up. Please limit your answers to 1 minute. There may be time for follow-ups. We have a timekeeper here to help us all stay on track. Let's get started with question one. It has to do with state revenues. Revenues got yet another downgrade earlier this month, and lawmakers will be dealing with yet another budget shortfall, not only for this fiscal year, but for the next one as well. Should the state raise new revenues to support government spending? And if so, which taxes and fees should be increased? Shap Smith, we'll start with you.
So I think that our first priority is to try to balance the budget within the revenues that we have. One thing that people should note is that revenues have been increasing. They just haven't increased as much as we thought they would. And as far as what's happening last year with a downgrade in 16, and fiscal year 17, I'm happy to report that spending is also below what was projected. So we were able to balance the 16 budget, even though we had lower revenues because we had spent less money. And the spending in fiscal year 17 is also projected to be lower. My view is that we should always look first to balance the budget within current revenues. And if there's something that's so important to Vermonters that they believe that we need additional spending, we should only do look at revenue at that point in time.
Quick follow-up. You were able to budget this fiscal year's budget because you did decide to increase new revenues. Do you anticipate needing to do that again in fiscal year 2017?
We had been stepping down from use of one-time monies over a period of years. This past year, I believe that we used almost no one-time monies for ongoing expenses. My hope and expectation is that we can balance next year's budget within current revenues.
Keisha Rahm, should government be raising new revenues to support government spending? And if so, which ones do you want to target?
You know, Vermonters are continually telling us that they're taking a Vermont discount on their wages and paying a Vermont premium on their cost of living, and it's unsustainable for them. And one of the major taxes that they're concerned about are property taxes, which isn't affected by our general fund, how we raise money in the general fund, except the general fund transfer from the sales tax. And so when we say to Vermonters, we're not going to raise general fund revenues, often that means our schools, our social services are not getting the support that they need to do valuable work unless they raise their property taxes. So what I would like to see, and Republicans and Democrats both can agree on this, is comprehensive tax reform, where we think about our whole tax system and how we ensure that we're not nickel and diming Vermonters every year with a volatile tax base, but we're looking at something like moving from taxable gross income to adjusted gross income and lowering the rate.
With the goal as well being to grow the amount of revenue that we're taking in from Vermonters on the whole?
You know, if we lower the rate, but we still increase the amount of revenue that we bring in, that can go right into a general fund transfer to our education fund so that we spend less from our property taxes on supporting Vermont children who really need it most with social services that are currently being implemented more by our schools through the property tax than they are the general fund.
David Zuckerman, does the state need to be raising more revenue than it is right now to support government spending? And if so, what taxes do you think we ought to be increasing to do it?
Well, first of all, as a small business owner, farm operator, I can tell you that when there's less revenue, you have to figure out how to make ends meet within what you've got. And with that experience, looking at state government, I've been on the education committee trying to get the human services folks and the education folks to work more closely together to actually save money and not do duplicating services where teachers are having to be social workers in the classroom And kids aren't getting the same access to education because the teachers are getting distracted in those scenarios. That's one example of an efficiency in government we could find, where instead of going back to taxpayers for more money, we can find savings in state government. For me, the other thing would be on property taxes, looking at the Pelina-Pearson idea that's now in a study committee this summer, to look at having income-based adjustments for property taxes across the whole economic spectrum. Right now, wealthier Vermonters are paying a much lower percentage of their income in property tax for our schools. If they were to pay the same as everybody else, the other 70% of us would see our taxes go down.
So no new taxes, just redistribute the burden across the taxpaying base?
Yeah, I think primarily redistribute the burden and then also find efficiencies, like I said, in education and social services so that we can actually use those resources to either expand services or apply towards cleaning up the lake or various other needs that we have.
Question number two now, looking at the economy, and this one is from Donna in South Burlington. She wants to know, how do you plan to stimulate economic development in order to create decent jobs that are going to raise the taxes to pay for everything else? David Zuckerman, what is your plan to stimulate the Vermont economy?
Well, certainly, if you look at the last number of years, both the sustainable energy community and the jobs we've produced there and the rural agricultural community and the jobs we've produced there have both been things that I've been working on and championing during my time in the legislature. As a farmer, I think there's still tremendous opportunity to expand the marketplace in southern New England with our rural agricultural products, be it agricultural or forestry products with the Vermont brand. But also, we have to invest in broadband infrastructure. We've had years and years and years where political leaders have said they were going to get it done. The governor, the speaker, and others was going to get done, and it hasn't been completed. I'd like to see us invest in that broadband so that folks don't have to commute to Chittenden County for jobs. They can actually get good jobs in our rural communities in some of those internet opportunities.
Ballpark, what size public investment do you think the state needs to make in order to realize the broadband vision that you see?
Well, I think if we were to put a few million dollars each year into really building out those last miles, we could accomplish the task fairly quickly. You know, when you look at our telephone infrastructure, our electricity infrastructure, those last miles are the ones that the private sector never wants to build out because they don't get the return on their investment. If we build it out and then we lease it out to providers to get our money back, let them compete for that, then that could be paid for in the long run.
Keshiram, your plan as Lieutenant Governor to spark the Vermont economy?
Well, you know, Pete, as we speak, we have Karn Cross and a number of entrepreneurs out there kicking off their road pitch, bringing new entrepreneurs and budding businesses into existing businesses to talk to them about their great new business ideas. And we just had Pitch VT that was run by the Chamber. And a good friend of mine and his crew won that contest to get $30,000 of new capital and investment in their new skincare company called OG. There's a lot of great entrepreneurs in the state, and they want a partner in Montpelier. And we have to remember that as much as we do to help reduce barriers for new entrepreneurs, that 80% of our economic development comes from helping existing small businesses become medium-sized businesses. And when I talk to business leaders around the state, what they're saying is that they need permit reform, they need more partners in Montpelier that help them cut through red tape and get through a lot of the paperwork of our economic development programs so that they can take that next step and employ more folks in the state.
So make this real for us. Give me a example of a specific regulatory provision on the books now that you think needs reshaping in order to help these entrepreneurs thrive.
You know, this evening I'll be going to the August 1st block party in downtown Burlington. August 1st Bakery and Cafe ran into a really onerous health department regulation about having one bathroom so they couldn't have the number of seats they needed to open. They came to me and I worked with them in Montpelier to get a variance from that particular regulation, and they bought the space next door and now have a bakery and are thriving. And that's the kind of work we need to do to help those small businesses grow bigger.
Shep Smith, economic development, top of mind for everybody. How are you going to make it happen?
Well, what I've seen traveling the state is that we have a lot of budding businesses, whether it's Against the Grain in Brattleboro, whether it's Global Z in Bennington, whether it's a bunch of our breweries like Hill Farmstead or Lost Nation in Mooresville. We have a lot of growing, budding businesses. What I hear from them is that they need help finding employees. And one of the things I think we need to do is be more intentional about the internships that we create for our colleges and universities so that we can partner businesses with potential employees and get what is one of our biggest imports, college students, bound to our businesses so that we can have a good, strong workforce. I also believe that we need to do more with broadband. The House passed a bill this past year putting a couple million dollars more into broadband, and unfortunately it didn't get through the Senate. As Lieutenant Governor, I'll work with the senators to make sure that happens next year.
People have been talking about workforce training for years as the solution to Vermont's employment woes. What specifically are you going to do that's different from what's going on right now to actually get these students ready for the jobs that employers say they can't fill?
Well, I think that we ought to look at two places that are doing it right. One of them is Champlain College and one of them is Vermont Technical College. Champlain College has internships for almost every kid that goes there, and they have 70% of their kids that come from out of state, over 50 get their first job in Vermont. Vermont Technical College, working with advanced manufacturing equipment that we paid for, the legislature paid for, to partner with local businesses to train their students and local kids so that they can work at those particular places of employment.
Let's turn our attention to healthcare now. And we got a question submitted by another listener. This is Eliza asking about Dr. Dinosaur.
Hello, my name is Eliza Kane. I'm calling from Moortown. I support the current efforts to expand Vermont's Dr. Dinosaur program as a next step to address the healthcare crisis in Vermont. What will you do to move this issue forward? Thank you.
Dr. Dinosaur, of course, is the program that provides subsidized health care to children who come from low-income families in this state. There are proposals out there, including a study underway in the legislature right now to see what that might look like to expand it. Keisha Rahm, what do you say about the Dr. Dinosaur expansion?
The proposal to expand Dr. Dinosaur is absolutely common sense. It will help attract young people, ensure that we don't have to have expensive family plans on the books, and grow our economy. And I defended it on the House floor when there was an effort to take the funding away to study the issue, because we believe that once we get information back about the program, we'll hopefully learn that it engenders cost savings. And it helps low-income Vermonters and middle-income Vermonters when you expand the program. You know, when you think about what young people need to stay in the state, one out of every six young people has a chronic illness, and they are the least likely of any person in employment to have access to healthcare. About 37% don't get access to healthcare through their employer. And so it's a no-brainer to help ensure our young people can stay and thrive and be healthy.
Conventional wisdom is that in order to pull this off, the state is going to have to impose some kind of a payroll tax on employers to pay for expanding Dr. Dinosaur. Do you support a payroll tax to fund this?
Again, what we hope and believe that the study will come back with is that right now businesses and families are taking money out of their pockets to pay for expensive family plans. And if we can get those off the books, hopefully it will yield cost savings for more businesses and families.
Shep Smith, you have been a vocal supporter of expanding Dr. Dinosaur to cover all Vermonters age 26 and younger. Why is it such an important thing to do?
Well, I stood with educators and with business owners last fall saying I believe that this was something that we should champion. Here's why. We were at the leading edge under Governor Cunin and Governor Dean in moving forward with the Dr. Dinosaur program and got every kid who was in a family of 300% poverty or less health care coverage. We know that's a program that works. We know that it's a program that gets our kids healthier. We know that actually a lot of kids who don't qualify it are having their parents have to make decisions under high deductible plans where they might actually not be able to do the right thing for their kids. That's why I support it. Look, I've been through the system in the last year trying to figure out how to pay for health care. It is incredibly difficult. We should at least give comfort of mind to our parents that their kids will have health care coverage.
And what about comfort of mind for the business owners who are looking at yet another proposal that might involve a payroll tax to pay for subsidized health care? What do you say to folks in the business community that say this is crazy?
So what I say to the people in the business community is you're paying for it now through a hidden tax, through the cost shift. And many business owners understand that, and they understand that, if they're providing health care, they're the ones who are subsidizing the system now. It is possible that people who are providing health care now will save money on this, given the fact that they're covering for those who are not providing coverage now.
David Zuckerman, what's your take on this proposal to expand Dr. Dinosaur?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the results of the study to show what that proposed payroll tax would be, for one, and what the savings would be, so we can really analyze the data. The other option that's been talked about is universal primary care, and in some ways, they may be competing ideas. It would be great if we could do both, but I think there really is limited amounts of money out there to do the transition. But universal primary care has also purported to save tremendous amounts of money, because instead of people waiting to go in to see their doctor when they have an illness, waiting till it gets severe, going to the emergency room where it costs significantly more money, we would create significant savings by expanding primary care to be universal for everyone. That would also start us down the road towards a universal healthcare system, which again is a fundamental shift that I think is important both for the health and outcomes for our citizens, but also a tremendous opportunity for our economy, because if we have universal healthcare and at least universal primary care, folks can potentially leave their place of work who have an idea and an entrepreneurial spirit to start a new business and create new jobs, and that will be a real economic engine.
But it sounds like, as of right now, your ultimate goal is a publicly financed universal healthcare system of the sort that was envisioned in Act 48 and until a couple years ago was the path that Vermont was headed on.
I think in the long run, that's where we've got to go. And clearly, we learned that maybe chewing it all off in one bite was too much. But if we can move in that direction, as Shap spoke about and Keisha as well, if we can work towards making more efficiencies in the system and show that there's savings as we implement these steps, then we can continue to move in that direction for the ultimate outcome that I think will be better for our health outcomes and better for our economy.
When we asked listeners for ideas, for questions to ask you all, the issue of child care was an incredibly popular one. We received this question from a listener named Courtney.
We know that over 70% of Vermont's children under 6 have all available parents in the workforce. Many of these families rely on child care, which can be very hard to find, especially for infants and toddlers, and equally hard to afford. What can the state do to help both families who can't find or afford care and providers who are struggling to make ends meet while doing incredibly important work?
And Courtney was not the only one that wanted your answers to this question. Shap Smith, what can the state do to make child care not only more affordable but more available in places that don't have it right now?
So I remember when we had our daughter, our second child, and I believe that Melissa told our daycare provider before she told me that she was pregnant, because she wanted to get in the queue for getting child care. That's how difficult it is to find child care around here. You know, we have a study coming back, Blue Ribbon Commission on Affordable and Quality Child Care, and I'm going to push hard to make sure that those recommendations are implemented. And this is an economic issue. This is not only a problem for families, but it's a problem for employers, because if their employees can't find child care, they can't recruit people. It's over $20,000 a year if you have 2 kids in childcare. That is unaffordable for most middle-class Vermonters, and we've got to figure out a way to make it better. I'll work with the Blue Ribbon Commission report to make sure that we can make the childcare affordable and quality.
And do you have to have an expenditure of taxpayer funds in order to make that possible?
I think that it's got to be a public-private partnership, because this is something that's important to both employers and the state government and their employees. So my hope is that the Blue Ribbon Commission is going to come back with some recommendations that could make it easier for businesses to support child care expenditures, as well as the public sector.
David Zuckerman, child care, what can the state do to make it more affordable and more available?
Well, there's a few different things. One is we can make a real solid effort and clear path towards raising the minimum wage to a livable wage. If people are actually earning more, they can afford to pay for things that right now they can't afford to pay for. And so raising the minimum wage across the board is critically important for affordability for everybody. I would also look towards if the state, we can find some of those efficiencies I talked about with education and human services earlier, we could direct some of that money into increasing the reimbursement rates and the payments to help low-income people afford childcare. I also think we can look at our gleaned food programs and try to encourage more healthy food to go into those childcare, either home-based settings or larger facilities, so that the kids that are in them are getting healthier food, as well as to lower the costs for those facilities and feeding those children. So it is extremely hard to find. There are a lot of regulatory hurdles to actually opening childcare facilities as well. And I think we have to look at that balance between making sure those facilities are up to snuff and good quality, but also not pricing it out of the opportunity for people to start home-based businesses.
But it doesn't sound like you're talking about any sort of direct bureaucratic intervention by the state, rather policies related to wages that would create an environment more conducive to people being able to get these things.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, if we can create an economic system where people can earn a livable wage and can afford their basic needs, then that will spur all of these kinds of opportunities for childcare or other small businesses as well. And also, as Shap spoke of, the Blue Ribbon Commission will look at what they present. And, you know, sometimes you can put the cart before the horse. There's a commission of experts who are working together to look at how we can resolve some of these challenges. And I think it's important that we look at what they come up with for solutions.
Keisha Ram, this is an issue you've been talking a lot about in your campaign. What do you think the state can and should do in order to make childcare more accessible and more affordable for families?
Well, first, as much as I support raising the minimum wage to a livable wage, that's one of the biggest problems our families face when they try to afford services without access to benefits. So I talk to employers who tell me they've had their employees say, please cut my hours back to 25 hours a week because otherwise I'll lose my child care subsidy. And that's the kind of attitude that's anti-growth, hurts businesses, and hurts our families. That's the first place I would go, is to look at expanding that slope so that people have access to child care as they earn more and more income. And, you know, I appreciate the question and how many people asked, because I was a Head Start advocate for our local preschool in Burlington. And, you know, we had interventions that parents just may never come across with. You know, we had a trilingual child who we realized was struggling with English, not because he was trilingual, but because he was deaf, and got him hearing aids. Or a little girl who sat under you know, the table and didn't want to talk to anyone as an immigrant. And I worked with her to help her be ready to read. And now she's in third grade doing really well.
And so the policy lever in government that you would pull first to try to alleviate and ameliorate some of the problems these folks are facing?
You know, you look at a state like Minnesota, and they tax the wealthiest, put a big chunk of that money into early childhood education, and they're seeing savings in special education. They're seeing less money needed further down the road when a child didn't get the early intervention and Head Start they need. So I would be seeking dedicated revenue, and it is priority number one for me to ensure every Vermont family has access to affordable, quality child care.
The greatest significance, really, of the lieutenant governor's position is realized only under unexpected and sometimes tragic circumstances. If a Republican is elected governor and he or she, for whatever reason, is unable to serve out the remainder of their term, I'm wondering how you would approach the role of being their replacement. Would you attempt to carry out the will of that person that voters had chosen for governor in their absence, or would you use the powers of that office to pursue your own policy agenda in their place? David Zuckerman, how would you resolve that conundrum?
Well, you know, when we look at the voter options, they get to choose who they want for governor and who they want for lieutenant governor, knowing full well that the candidate for lieutenant governor may well become governor. So I think they're electing each of us on our sensibilities and our issues and our platform. And if I were to ascend to governor under unfortunate circumstances, I would move towards the agenda that I'm talking about. Folks' challenges for working longer hours to make ends meet, that the government looks out for the wealthy and not the average person. You know, folks can't find childcare, as we just talked about. I would work towards tackling those issues. And I wouldn't do it in a flip the switch overnight, everything changes. You certainly want smooth transition. You want to make sure that systems move fluidly, and I wouldn't just throw out the cabinet. You'd evaluate each person and their skill sets at managing their departments and agencies. But when it comes to policy, if there are different policies from myself and the governor-elect, then I would move towards that agenda.
Keisha Ram, would you try to execute the agenda that the governor had in place before you became the replacement, or would you start over and bring your own ideas and insert your own agenda?
You know, one of the first things that Governor Dean told me when I embarked on my campaign was you have to have the knowledge, the skill, the experience to get the job done as governor, and you have to have the humility to recognize it wasn't you who was elected for that position. And I absolutely take that to heart. One of my great mentors and friends, Representative Patty Comline in the legislature, once said to me, you know, if we're all doing our job, it's the majority that steers the ship and it's the minority that points out the rocks. And I've always taken that to heart and worked to build consensus and try to ensure that I'm representing all Vermonters. And that's what I would do as governor.
Shep Smith.
I wouldn't actually take anybody's particular agenda. I would take Vermonters' agenda. If there was some challenge where the governor had to step down, that would be a crisis in this state. And I think it's not about moving the prior governors or my agenda. It's making sure that we can steady the ship and make sure that Vermont is in good, solid perspective. One of the things I think I bring to the table is a demonstrated ability over the course of my 14 years in the legislature and 8 years as speaker to work with people of every political stripe to get things done for Vermonters. That's the same thing I would bring if I was in the governor's chair.
You're listening to the Democratic Lieutenant Governor's Debate on Vermont Edition. Our candidates in the studio are Shep Smith, David Zuckerman, and Keisha Rahm. Just ahead, they'll question each other directly on the issues in the race. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Peter Hirschfeld, and this is Debate Week on VPR. Today, the three Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor are in our Colchester studio. Keisha Rahm is a state representative from Burlington, Speaker of the House Shep Smith from Morrisville, and David Zuckerman of Hinesburg. Listeners, if you're following along on social media, please use the hashtag VPR Debate Week. In this second half of the debate, the candidates will question each other directly. Questions should not be speeches and should be succinct. We'll start with David Zuckerman. Who's your first question for?
I've got a question for Speaker Smith.
Okay, go right ahead.
Earlier in the campaign on this program, actually, you suggested Vermont could maybe do away with the estate tax, which brings in millions of dollars from people who stand to inherit estates worth over $2.75 million. While also campaigning, you indicated to propose raising a sales tax, which hits working Vermonters and their families hardest. Why would you want to shift towards taxing working Vermonters more?
Well, when Governor Douglas was the governor, I fought against his efforts to reduce the estate tax. And when I spoke on the program, I said that I was philosophically opposed to getting rid of the estate tax, but that I was concerned about the volatility of the revenue. So I did not suggest that we should get rid of it. I did say that it was a concern with regard to reliance for state spending because it's so volatile. I have real concerns with the funding that was proposed by your committee for the lake cleanup, which essentially added a property tax to fund the lake cleanup. And I just don't think that people are looking for more property taxes.
David Zuckerman.
Well, it's interesting because I've looked into the numbers on that. And when you talked about 0.5% on the sales tax, that would come out to a family of four on average paying about $64 more a year. The parcel fee that came out of my committee was $25 or $1 per acre for those parcels larger, farmers and others who the money would go to the Clean Water Fund. So I appreciate the difference, but it's still almost a 2 or 3 to 1 tax increase the way you've proposed it relative to what the committee I was on would propose.
I would just say that I didn't actually propose it. We were asked in a forum whether we would look at certain items with regard to funding lake cleanup. I didn't say that that was what I was going to support. I did say there are a bunch of alternatives. I think we're waiting for proposals to come back with regard to funding. I just don't think that we should put any more burden on the property tax. And I had some concerns with the proposal that you and had offered.
This round, candidates are asking each other the questions, as you can hear here. Keisha Rahm, who is your question for?
Can I ask both of them a question?
Absolutely.
90% of new Vermonters in the last decade identify as people of color. As a woman of color that has led in the legislature on recognizing the Black Lives Matter movement, community policing, immigrant driver's licenses, and Abenaki tribal recognition, I ask, what do you count as your single greatest achievement to combat racial justice that has made an impact?
David Zuckerman, let's start with you.
Well, I think there's certainly a few different things, but you know, it's a real struggle out there. There is tremendous bias inherent in, I think, everybody. And one of the things we all have to do is recognize that, whether it's in government or in ourselves as individuals. And so that's a challenge I put out to every individual, not just state government. But there's no doubt that I think one of the most effective things going forward is our having supported the racial bias studies of our law enforcement. And we now have those results, and it's quite clear that there are some real challenges there. And I'm really proud of our Burlington Chief of Police, as well as the state police, who are embracing those results, recognizing that in job training and in their ongoing trainings, they really need to look at those inherent biases, because ultimately it is not a welcoming community when folks are pulled over multiple times. I have a constituent in Hinesburg, a friend of mine, who has been pulled over numerous times by our own Hinesburg police. They already know him and have repeatedly asked him questions when other folks don't face that. So I think that's a significant, important thing to address as we go forward.
So in your personal life, what have you done to have an impact on racial justice?
Individually? I treat everybody with equal respect. I hire people, and when I hire folks, it is based on their ability to do the job. I look at my own inherent biases. If I see something come up, I challenge my own thinking. And so it's personal reflection on a regular basis. As a white male, admittedly, I am privileged in our society, and recognizing that and addressing it on a personal basis day to day is what we all should be doing.
And let's give Shep Smith now a chance to answer. Shep, what have you done in your public life as Speaker of the House to address issues of racial bias in Vermont?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we've done in the House, and I was really supportive of this, was Representative Lippert, when he was the chair of the Judiciary Committee, was pushing very, very hard for bias in policing information and studies. And I think there were a lot of people who questioned why we needed to do it, and I supported him wholeheartedly in that effort. And I think the results that we've seen recognize that we still have a lot of challenges within our police force in the state. I just met with Ingrid Jonas, who is working on that for the state police, to talk to her about what we can do generally to make sure that people of color feel like they are welcome in this state from every one of our public officials.
Shep Smith, it's your turn now to ask another candidate a question. Who is yours going to be for?
I'm going to ask Keisha a question. So, Keisha, last week you said that you voted against removing the philosophical exemption from the bill involving vaccinations because you felt that the religious exemption should be removed as well. The question I have is, why did you not propose that as an amendment to that bill when it came forward?
Well, I guess the personal reason is because a few weeks before my father had passed away, and I had just come back from India where I had taken his ashes. And so faced with what I thought was a very divisive conversation that hadn't been brought to the floor in a way that would engender a positive conversation. And as you may recall, that was a very divided bill. I was worried we were moving too quickly on an issue that needed much more careful consideration.
And have you found resolution on that in the intervening months?
Yes. If it was up to me, what I felt we heard in the legislature from the people who were adamantly opposed to this legislation was that they had another child who had had what they perceived as an adverse reaction to a vaccine, and they used the philosophical exemption to try and keep their next child safe from having to have that vaccine. And that's something we should dig into and look at the medical exemption and how we ensure parents feel heard in that process while removing both the philosophical and religious exemption.
Shep Smith, briefly, is that a sound position in your view?
Well, I think that the philosophical exemption certainly was a difficult conversation, but it was one that we had been having for several years, and it was warranted to bring it to the floor. I think that it was a very healthy conversation to have, and given the public health concerns that have been raised not only in Vermont but around the country, I think that we ended up moving in the right direction.
You're listening to a debate now among Democrats running for Lieutenant Governor, Shap Smith, David Zuckerman, and Keisha Rahm. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPR Debate Week. Let's go now to a second round of candidate questions for each other. Keisha, your turn. Who do you want to ask a question to?
It's a question for both of them with a follow-up for Dave, if that's okay.
Let's see how far we get.
Great. In 2014, the legislature passed S-82 that expanded the amount corporations can donate to candidates. I was the only one in this race to vote against the bill and one in 15 in the legislature to stand up against it. Why did you both support a bill that VPIRG called a money arms race? And Dave, why, after supporting the bill, did you file a lawsuit against the state regarding corporate finance and public financing, and how much did that cost the state?
David, let's let you go first so that's fresh in your mind.
Well, a couple different things. First of all, with that legislation, there was language that I got in the Senate to double the public financing for lieutenant governor from $1 to $200,000 and for governor from $3 to $600,000 to make those actually viable amounts so that folks could run with public financing. Unfortunately, with your starting the campaign more than a year before the election, which I think Vermonters would prefer shorter elections, it became clear as I was talking with other people that if I didn't get into the race, slowly endorsements would go because folks didn't even know. Because this is reality. Not everybody knows who's running in November and December. So I did enter the race. I did want to run with public financing. I started collecting contributions under that method, even though the law was written that it would stop. You couldn't start until February 15th. And in doing so, I, of course, had to try to ask for judicial relief to access that through free speech, starting to run a campaign outside of the window. I don't know what it cost the state. I don't think it was a significant amount of money. But ultimately, as the only candidate in this race who has not accepted corporate contributions, I find it interesting that you voted for the bill to not increase them, but are more than happy to accept corporate donations.
And before we give Keisha an opportunity to respond to that if she'd like, Shap Smith, your answer to Keisha's question.
I think it's fair to say that probably all of the candidates here would prefer to have publicly financed elections. I don't think any of us like to spend time raising money on the phone. It's, I think, one of the most difficult parts of any campaign. And, you know, having talked, I know all of them, you know, Keisha and David, and I, you know, we have conversations outside of the campaign. I think it's true that, you know, we would prefer that. Unfortunately, we have the Citizens United ruling, which I think has been a bane to our political process generally. My view is that the bill that we passed was balanced in its campaign finance requirements, and the balance was one that was carefully negotiated. I realized that VPIRG didn't like it. There are times where bills pass that VPIRG doesn't like.
Keisha.
Sure.
Follow-up thought.
Yeah. Well, and I have, you know, taken several contributions from small businesses, and I'm proud to have the support of those folks. I don't hide that fact. But Dave, I think it's interesting you mentioned that when 7 Days reports you wrote a letter to all lobbyists this year asking them for contributions from their clients and said, quote, I was actually hoping a few more would open their wallets.
Well, and what I made very clear in that letter, which you've chosen to selectively indicate, is that I asked them to send letters to their clients, Vermonters as individuals, and that if they as individuals wanted to contribute to my campaign like any other Vermonter, I would welcome that. I also made it clear in that letter that I would not accept corporate contributions from their clients per se as corporations, and that I think every Vermonter, whether you run a business or you lobby or not, that as an individual, you should be allowed to contribute.
And Shap Smith, one final brief thought on this point.
So this is the challenge with just saying I'm against corporate contributions, because if you're seeking contributions from the corporation's lobbyists, that's not really much of a distinction. Or if you're seeking contributions from the corporation's executives, it's hard for a lot of Vermonters to understand that that's really a distinction that makes a difference. That's why we need a broader public finance reform.
Shap Smith, who do you want to direct your question to in this round?
I would like to direct this to both candidates.
Go ahead.
Now, I know that both of you supported Bernie in the primaries. I would like to know from each one of you whether you will support Hillary Clinton as a Democratic nominee for president.
Keisha Rahm, go ahead.
I was a proud co-chair of Asian Americans for Bernie, and Vermonters should all be proud of the race that Bernie ran. And I was fortunate enough to be at the Democratic National Convention on Monday, where we had Vermonters fighting for one of the most progressive platforms in the history of the Democratic Party. And now what we have is a solid, historic, pragmatic candidate with Bernie's platform. And I think that's an incredible opportunity for all of us. I am proud to support Hillary Clinton, and I believe that our choice now is Donald Trump or America as we know it, and we cannot afford to let him win. I will do whatever I can to help make sure Hillary Clinton is elected president.
David Zuckerman.
Well, let me start by saying, as the only candidate who's ever been endorsed by Bernie, and I've been endorsed by him 10 times in all my House and Senate races, I could not have been more proud to stand on the waterfront last spring cheering him on in his bid for president. And it was incredibly exciting to work with him. He asked me to speak on his behalf in New Hampshire the week before the New Hampshire primary. And that's a real honor and trust to put that into me. And I appreciated his willingness to do that. Bernie has changed the conversation across the country, and that's very, very important because working people have been struggling and getting farther and farther behind with the economic systems of, frankly, both major parties at the national level. His effort did change the dynamic. It changed the platform, and I'm very pleased that a lot more of that got in there, and I will absolutely be helping Hillary win over Trump for many of the reasons that Keisha just spoke of. There is no doubt that a Trump presidency would set us back in so many ways, from a woman's right to choose to economic justice to racial disparities. It is frightening to think about what Trump would be. And, the last thing I would say with respect to the question is that, you know, Shap, you supported Hillary from the get-go when 86% of Vermonters didn't. Was that a matter of establishment politics? You know, what is the reason for that when Bernie has done so much for Vermont?
10 seconds, Shap Smith.
I supported Hillary in 2008. I was proud of the fact that in 2004 she was fighting for health care for all Americans, and because I believed in health care. I think that what Bernie did was fantastic, and his contribution to the race was fantastic.
David Zuckerman, last question in this round. Who is it going to be directed at?
Well, it's directed to Shap as well. As Speaker, for many years, you had a tremendous opportunity to take on the governor and really challenge the management skills with respect to implementing Vermont Health Connect. And there's even a special committee to take that on and do that work. Why should we think that somehow you'll be able to do more as lieutenant governor than you were as speaker, which in many respects is a more powerful position in terms of setting the agenda and moving the agenda, since as speaker you really design all the committees? As lieutenant governor, you don't have as much power.
Well, I'm proud of my record as speaker. We passed marriage equality. We passed paid sick days. We increased the minimum wage. We moved forward with death with dignity legislation and got that passed. You know, a lot of things that had been proposed got across the finish line under my leadership as speaker. And I will say that one of the proudest moments of my life was when I stood at the podium and announced the fact that we had passed marriage equality, when in the fall of 2008, California overwhelmingly elected President Obama, but at the same time passed a restriction on marriage equality. I believe that my leadership on that issue and the work of the House and the Senate changed the dialogue in the country.
I'm Peter Hirschfeld, and you're listening to a debate among the Democrats running for lieutenant governor, Shap Smith, David Zuckerman, and Keisha Rahm. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebateWeek. We have enough time for what we're going to call a quick answer round. It's going to be one question, and I'd like you to keep your answers as brief as possible. And it's this. What elected office in the state has the most impact on Vermonters, in your view? And is that a post that you hope to hold one day? Keisha Rahm, let's start with you.
Well, I'm currently focused on the position that I'm running for as lieutenant governor. I want to make the position a connector in chief for all Vermonters. I want to ensure we are traveling every corner of the state and beyond to be an ambassador for the issues we care about and a thought leader and a people's advocate that can get important work done for individual businesses and families and then turn around and see what else we can do to support Vermonters. So I'm really focused on this position, and I have a fire in my belly to win.
Shep Smith.
I think every office, depending on who the office holder, can be used effectively to move things for the state of Vermont. Frankly, As the lieutenant governor, I believe that I'll bring the skills that I've brought over the last 8 years to bring people together, make sure that we can move in the right direction to move Vermont forward. That's why I believe that I will be the most effective person in the lieutenant governor's office.
David Zuckerman.
I agree. I think the individual can make, the results that they want to see. And as legislators, you do a lot of constituent service work. And as a lieutenant governor, I think it'll bring the skills out of what I did as a representative and senator, really putting large issues out there. And then, as uniquely, I would say, amongst the candidates here, really working to bring groups together from around the state. I've got Susan Murray, Stan Baker, and other marriage community leaders' endorsement. Why? Because I led on that issue and helped work with them across the state to build the momentum so SHAP could get it across the finish line.
Our closing question now, Shap Smith, David Zuckerman, Keisha Rahm, each of you is running as a Democrat. Each of you is a member of the state legislature, and your campaign platforms frequently overlap. We're going to give you a last moment here to make your case to voters by answering this closing question from Daniel in Marlboro. He asks, what would you say is the most significant difference between yourself and your opponents? Keisha Rahm.
Well, a lot of folks have heard from my time on VPR and around the state. I grew up in my Indian immigrant father and Jewish American mother's Irish pub, sweeping peanut shells off the floor and putting in a hard day's work. But what a lot of folks don't know is that when my mother didn't feel like an equal in the business and the relationship, she left. And my father really couldn't hold down the business on his own. He lost our family business. His home was foreclosed. My mother had 2 degrees but 3 kids to take care of and couldn't find a job with the flexibility to take care of us. And she would sometimes ask, you know, her boyfriend, could I borrow $20 for groceries? I forgot my wallet, and that's what we ate for the week. So I grew up learning what opportunities I needed to take advantage of to be successful, to get to college, to be able to run for the legislature when I was 21. And I've been fighting for Vermont families to have the same opportunity from day one, whether it was as a preschool teacher, a social worker for victims of domestic violence, or as a four-term legislator. Those are the issues I care about. I want to put families and children first.
Shap Smith, the biggest difference between you and your Democratic rivals in this race?
I think there are 3 things. I've got demonstrated experience as the leader of the House chamber, somebody who can get things like minimum wage, paid sick leave, marriage equality, death with dignity across the finish line, somebody who can bring people together. That's why over 70 senators and representatives have endorsed my candidacy. The second thing is I grew up in Vermont. I left. I came back. I have that experience of having been someone who was raised in Vermont. And the third thing is somebody who lives outside of Chittenden County, works in Chittenden County, has an understanding of the two Vermonts and understands that there is a world outside of Chittenden County. Chittenden County is critically important to us, but we also need to make sure everywhere else in the state is doing well as well.
David Zuckerman, biggest difference between you and your Democratic rivals in this primary race?
Well, I think there's a few different things. One is I've started a business and grown that business and employ people. And that's a reality that we need more of in Vermont. I'm a farmer, and so in representing Chittenden County, which is in large part the big economic engine of the state, also as a farmer, I know folks' issues all across the state in terms of a hard day's work, trying to produce a product and selling that product and making a living. And I'll say if you look at a diagram, you could say there's 2 candidates in this race that have tremendous experience long-term in the legislature, children in the schools, looking for child care, life experience in the private sector, and there's 2 candidates that are more bold on the issues. If you actually look at that scenario, I'm the one that encompasses both of those uniquely. And so if you're looking for experience and bold ideas on the issues, and the only person who's been endorsed by Bernie, I would seek your support. I would also say that I'm the only one with endorsements from Bill McKibben and the environmental community through the Sierra Club. I've gotten labor endorsements from Rights and Democracy and VSCA and others in terms of my fighting for livable wages and working class issues. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Democratic debate for Lieutenant Governor on Vermont Edition with candidates Keisha Rahm, Shap Smith, and David Zuckerman. Thanks to all 3 of you for taking part.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Debate Week continues tomorrow with the Democratic candidates for treasurer. Challenger Richard Dunn is raising issues like divestment from fossil fuels in his race against incumbent Beth Pierce. That debate is tomorrow, live at noon. Debate Week on VPR's Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Our director today was Mary Williams, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. Thanks for listening.